It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Hello! Welcome to the first day of December. We have made it to the final level of 2020. And so, good luck to you. May the gods be in your favor or whatever. Thanks for tuning in. It is News to Me time. It's actually 1902. Sorry for the little bit of a slow start there. I do the show live. So a lot of times I'm interrupting work meetings, be like, oh, sorry guys, I got a really important thing I got to get to. And it's you. So thanks for being here. Thanks for tuning in. And don't forget, after this show today, there is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. So stick around. It's a good time. There's lots of stuff. Check out the schedule at anonradio.net. So let's do what we always do. Let's turn on the blender.
World news.
There we go. Let's see. First up, we'll start up in Canada. Our friends at Reuters say Canadian PM Trudeau indicates U.S. border restrictions to last a long time. Wearing a COVID beard, Trudeau is photographed in this article. He says, Canada will not agree to lifting a ban on non-essential travel with the United States until the outbreak is significantly under control around the world, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said on Tuesday. Greetings, Tobe. Thank you for being in comm. And thank you to anybody else who's in comm. You can just type comm at the SDF prompt and go to the Anon radio room. All right, so Trudeau's comments were a clear indication the border restrictions will last well into 2021. The two neighbors agreed to the ban in March and have rolled it over on a monthly basis ever since. The ban doesn't affect trade. The two countries have highly integrated economies, and Canada sends 75% of its goods exports to the U.S. every month. Till the virus is significantly more under control everywhere around the world, we're not going to be releasing the restrictions at the border, Trudeau told the Canadian Broadcasting Corp when asked about the issue. So we'll see how long that lasts. Good luck. And then Canada unveiled the largest economic relief package since World War II. Greetings, X1. Thanks for joining in. Canada's federal government will spend $100 billion, that's 77 billion U.S. dollars, or 58 billion pounds, to kickstart the country's post-pandemic recovery. It's the largest economic relief package for our country since the Second World War, Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland said on Monday. The spending will bring the deficit to a historic $381.6 billion by March 2021. The wide-ranging plan includes targeted relief for hard-hit business sectors, investment in long-term care homes, and distribution of COVID-19 vaccine. The announcements, the first full fiscal update from the Canadians' Liberal government since the onset of the pandemic, comes as the country battles a steep second wave of COVID-19 infections. There are a number of active cases in Canada, has more than doubled in November alone, bringing the total number of infections to more than 376,000. So far, more than 12,000 Canadians have died. When the virus is under control and our economy is ready for new growth, we will employ an ambitious stimulus package. So, we will see how that plays out, but it sounds like I've got a plan up north, which is good, hopefully. So, we've talked about this briefly, but Al Jazeera, I've thrown Al Jazeera into my mix of news sites, and they had an article, "Why are thousands of Indian farmers protesting?" And I thought that was kind of, it was interesting because it answers kind of succinctly what's going on. Some of India's farmers are among the country's poorest people, but government policies have long protected them from the ravages of open market prices, and that is changing. A set of three laws passed in September aims to deregulate India's enormous agriculture sector. Prime Minister Narendra Modi has said they will liberate farmers from the tyranny of middlemen. But many farmers fear that they stand to lose more than they could gain from the new regulations and that the main beneficiaries will be agricultural corporations with gargantuan financial power. As a result, the farmers have taken to the streets in the biggest such protest in years. The demonstrations ramped up last week when several thousand protesters from the northern states of Punjab and Haryana set out to converge on the capital of New Delhi. Police blocked them at the city's borders, denying them permission to gather in place of their choice. So. Oh! X1 has news that he had COVID, but no antibodies. That sounds suspicious. Tests are dubious. Speaking of dubious, Dubious Goals Committee, 23 minutes away. Oh, man, I have this ginger made today. And that is the third steeping, and it is just as good as the first. So, I believe that I may have been throwing away good ginger may without due steepage. So, I'm sorry, tea gods. Please forgive me. So, what do India's new farm laws do? Well, they make it easier for farmers to bypass government-regulated markets, known as mandis, or mandis, and sell produce directly to private buyers. They can now enter into contracts with private companies, a practice known in India as contract farming, and sell across state borders. The new regulations also allow traders to stockpile food. This is a shift away from prohibitions against hoarding, which could make it easier for traders to take advantage of rising prices, such as during a pandemic. Such practices were criminal offenses under the old rules. So a big one of why is this a problem is a big one of is that the new rules remove many of the safeguards. More than 86 of India's cultivated farmland is controlled by smallholder farms who own less than 2 hectares, which is 5 acres of land each. They fear that they do not have enough bargaining power to get the kind of prices they need for a decent standard of living when they negotiate to sell their produce to larger companies. The government's left is at the mercy of big corporations, Rashbinder Singh, 27, a farmer from Punjab, said. It's preposterous to believe that farmers who have small land holdings will have any bargaining power over private players. So, yeah. So, it's very scary stuff. It's very interesting. But we'll see how it goes. Vietnam entered into a trade deal with Europe recently, and it's kind of questionable because Vietnam is liable to suffer, or Vietnamese farmers are likely to suffer a similar fate to what these farmers are worried about. So it'll be interesting. All right, let's pick up the pace. Sorry, I'm a little slow today. Berlusconi puts Italian government in trouble over EU bailout fund. Italian former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi said on Tuesday his Forza Italia opposition party would not back a reform of the Eurozone bailout fund, a move that puts the government in difficulty ahead of a crucial parliamentary vote. The photo shows the Prime Minister pulling his mask down, and it's pulled his ears forward in a kind of a funny way, so it's kind of silly, but he does look happy. Reform of the fund, known as the European Stability Mechanism, has lacerated the ruling majority. The Five Star Movement, the biggest party in Parliament, says it would increase the risk of a public debt restructuring. Its Democratic Party allies not only back the reform, but also want Italy to use ESM funds to help its coronavirus-battered health system. So, we'll see what happens. Looks like political... yeah. Totally excellent. Yeah, there's the TPP... It's kind of an interesting thing on its own to talk about. Let's go to Africa for some news here real quick. This is from Al Jazeera. Food has run out for Eritrean refugees in Tigray camps, the UN warns. Hunger and malnutrition are a real danger for nearly 100,000 refugees sheltering in Tigray camps. The United Nations has sounded the alarm over the severe effect of food shortages on the refugees sheltering in camps in the Tigray region. Wednesday marks a month since Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed announced a military operation against forces loyal to the Tigray People's Liberation Front, which ruled the northern region of 6 million people. Communications and transport links to Tigray have since been severed, and the UN and humanitarian agencies have pleaded for access to deliver badly needed food, medicine, and other supplies. Concerns are growing by the hour, UN refugee spokesman Babar Balak told reporters in Geneva on Tuesday. The camps will have now run out of food supplies, making hunger and malnutrition a real danger, a warning we've been issuing since the conflict began nearly a month ago. We are also alarmed at unconfirmed reports of attacks, abduction, and forced recruitment at the refugee camps. So, it's going to be a little scary. It is a little scary there. It's big scary, a lot of Africa right now. Just a couple other headlines. The UN says Sudan needs $150 million to help refugees there. And, yeah, so anyway, that's just one other headline. It was a related article, and I was like, oh yeah, that's true. The Guardian's given us some news from Russia. A Russian man confesses to killing more than 25 women. Russian investigators claim to have caught the man responsible for more than 25 murders attributed to a perpetrator known for years only as the Volga Maniac. Russia's investigative committee said that the suspect, a 38-year-old man named Radik Tagarov, confessed to a string of 26 murders of elderly women that had terrorized central Russia between 2011 and 2012. He'd been identified using DNA evidence, shoe prints, and other evidence from crime scenes. Tagarov had conned his way into the apartments of elderly women living alone by impersonating an electrician, plumber, or utilities worker. Once inside, he'd overpower the women and strangle his victims using either his hands or nearby objects, including an apron and a clothesline. The vast majority of his victims were older than 70. He often robbed his victims, but in some cases left valuables untouched. He wore gloves and had sterilized crime scenes before leaving to thwart investigators. The murders, most of which took place between 2011 and 2012, were recorded in a number of Russian cities, including Kazan, Samara, Toliate, Ishkava, Ufa, and others. Other killings were suspected to have taken place in the Urals, although the exact number of victims has never been established. The serial killer appeared to have gone quiet after 2013, but a killing spree in the region in 2017 renewed fears among the public. Police in 2019 offered a £30,000 reward for information leading to his arrest. So, glad that they turned themselves in, but that's kind of neat. Sorry, I'm just in a weird space today. Speaking of that, as the virus resurges, mental health woes batter France. This is coming from the AP. A panicked 22-year-old is led to consolation room number 2, with its easy mop floor and honeycombed meshing over the window. Behind her, the psychiatric emergency ward's heavy double doors, openable only with the staff member's key thud shut. With anxious taps of her white sneakers, she confides to an on-duty psychiatrist how the solitude of the coronavirus lockdown and the angst of not finding work in the pandemic battered job market are contributing to her maelstrom of anxieties. She's unnerved that she's starting to obsess about knives, fearful that her mental health might be collapsing. The lockdown, let's not pretend otherwise, worries me, the young woman explains through her surgical mask as a psychiatrist, Irene Fasello, listens intently. I want to be reassured, the woman says, that I'm not going mad. Forcing millions of people to once again stay home, cutting them off from families and friends, shuttering businesses they invested in, university classes that fed their minds, and night spots where they socialized, has for now begun to turn back the renewed coronavirus surge in France that pushed it, in November, past the bleak milestone of 52,000 dead. The cost to mental health has been considerable, with numbers now falling for French COVID-19 patients in intensive care. Psychiatrists are now facing a follow-up wave of psychological distress. So, yeah, it's very, very sad. I had a story yesterday that I didn't get to that I want to, I think, ties in nicely with that. So let me just pull that up real quick. And this is from a site called TRT World, so TangoRomeoTangoWorld.com. In October 2nd, 153 Japanese people committed suicide, a number that exceeds the country's total COVID-19 toll, which stood at 2,087 for the entire year to date. Japan has witnessed a sharp surge in suicides, mostly among women, amid the novel coronavirus pandemic that's forced governments around the world to impose lockdowns, curfews, and suspensions of several economic drivers. Sorry if you can hear the leaf blowers. I have a poorly insulated home. Hi, Ratsu. Hi, Exile. Glad you guys are hanging out and chatting. X1, aw yeah. According to Japanese government statistics, the deaths by suicide in just 1 month have surpassed the total death toll in the island nation. Japan's National Police Agency said the suicides increased to 2153 in October from 1805 in September. The number of suicides has also risen in the past 4 months compared to the same period in 2019. Although suicide is a major societal issue in Japan, restrictions on social interaction have left people isolated, and many have lost their jobs. The suicide number in Japan was 21,897 in 2016, which puts it near the top for suicide in developed countries. Before the pandemic, the rate was decreasing in Japan. They fell by 4.2% in 2019 compared to the previous year. Figures had been lower than 20,000 for the first time since 1978 when the authorities began compiling data. So the government's trying to determine if the increase is linked to the spread of the coronavirus, which has claimed over a million lives worldwide. So we'll see. Oh. Jeepers, creepers. That's gotta be... Yeah. I can't hear myself in my microphone, so I guess that means it's time to play a song. Until the noise bank I'm in quiets down. Anyway, here's a song.
Public Access Unix System.
Yes, and I think the leaf blower has passed, thankfully. I can still hear it, but it's not deafening. Welcome back. It is news to me. Despite what you've heard, it is a news show. So let's talk about some news. Sorry, I was just goofing around. Bob Jonkman is in the comm. Hello, hello. All right, so let's keep on going. Going to pick up the pace because we've only got about 9 minutes before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe kicks off. So we're going to go in backwards order from what I had before because we'll see what happens. Let's see what we got here. All right. Donald Trump is reportedly considering pardoning his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, who's led his disastrous legal challenge to Joe Biden's electoral victory. The president continues to stew over his defeat on social media, even sharing a tweet that asks, "Why bother voting for Republicans?" The post comes amid a war of words with GOP Governor of Arizona Doug Ducey and his Georgia counterpart Brian Kemp over their failure to overturn results in the president's favor, despite Giuliani's team failing to produce any credible evidence whatsoever to justify his claims of mass voter fraud. So, that's one of the headlines. Truth Out. I like Truth Out, but it's, they are hurting for money, and so I'm getting emails, like, every goddamn, like, sometimes more than once a week, it feels like, and I'm ready to stop, I'm about to stop listening to them. I gave them $5 once, and I get bombarded from these guys. Anyway, they have a nice long-form piece referencing Noam Chomsky and how Trump kind of revealing the fragility of our democracy in the U.S. So, anyway, it's a good article. Just if you give them money, just be warned they're going to send you lots of email. All right. So, In These Times has an article if you want to talk about labor or read about labor. Healthcare workers are organizing like their lives depend on it. Faced with an ongoing PPE shortages and employer obfuscation about deadly outbreaks, more hospital staff are seeing on-the-job solidarity as essential work. And then it goes on to give some case study about why healthcare workers need to unionize and work together and kind of bring balance, because it's, in a wonderful, ideal society, healthcare would just be a thing that exists, and everyone, you know, you get it, la-da-da. But it is, in the U.S., a real big business, and if it's a business, that means that there's labor, and there's management, and the management will fuck you over any chance it gets to make a buck. Speaking of which, friends at the World Socialist website, a GM Fairfax worker speaks out over management UAW cover-up of COVID-19 spread. The World Socialist website Auto Worker Newsletter recently spoke with a worker at the General Motors Fairfax assembly plant in Kansas City, Kansas, about the ongoing spread of COVID-19 inside the plant and the cover-up by GM management and their accomplices in the UAW. Corona virus has been surging across Kansas and Missouri, with both states recording their highest totals over the preceding days, with no signs... Yeah, sorry, I get a little heated when I talk about labor. Both states recording their highest totals over the preceding days with no sign of abating. As of Monday, nearly half of Kansas City's metro area hospitals anticipated critical staffing shortages for the coming weeks. Yeah, so you can read more about that at the World Socialist website. They've got plenty to say about that. And Giuliani's already... we mentioned Giuliani a second ago, but I wanted to just mention that, oh, shucks, this bookmark is a live bookmark. The Guardian has this feature where you can load, oh, wow, hey, son, that's cool. Sorry you got screwed over. Anyway, the Guardian has this nice feature where they have a live page of news. The problem is if you bookmark it for a story, when you load the page back up, that story is not there anymore. So sorry, I can't give you any more detail. Oh, we only have 5 minutes. All right, let's do this. Bam, bam, bam. Former Tesla employee to pay $400,000 to end lawsuit over tips to reporters. What? An employee paying their employer? Yeah, that's right. A former Tesla Inc. factory employee will pay Elon Musk's electric car maker $400,000 after it accused him of tipping reporters about alleged production inefficiencies and delays. The payment by Martin Tripp, a former process technician at Tesla's Gigafactory near Reno, was part of a settlement disclosed on Monday. And approved that day by Chief Judge Miranda Dew of the federal court in Reno. Tesla and Musk had become embroiled in a public dispute with Tripp in June 2018 when it fired and then sued him. The Palo Alto, California-based company accused Tripp of writing software to hack into its manufacturing operating system, stealing trade secrets, and making false claims to reporters about information he stole. Dew has said Tripp characterized himself as a whistleblower who's identified production inefficiencies and delays. So, we'll see how that works out. The Nation has a nice article, or an interesting article anyway, it's just a little too long for the time we have left. Privatizing Puerto Rico. The rush sell-off of the territory's electrical utility is a part of a larger move to gut public goods for private profit. And then also in Puerto Rico, yeah, they're not saying the truth. Yeah. It's important because people don't like to get labels. It's really dumb. All right. Oh, shucks. Pushed the wrong button. All right. Here we go. The next thing is still in Puerto Rico. The giant Arecibo radio telescope collapsed. So a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, if you might remember, we talked about it being shut down and how they shut it down and they didn't think they could fix it. It was too dangerous to fix. Well, the whole thing collapsed. So the world's largest radio telescope is no more. It's not just decommissioned. It just doesn't exist anymore. Now it's just a giant crater in the ground. And that actually is the segue to something that I thought was really cool. It's on the BBC. It's scary, but it's cool. Siberia is getting covered with exploding craters. What? Yes. Just giant craters. This permafrost thaws out. This methane gas, or just these gases, pool up. They start rising up. And then something happens, and boom, there's an explosion, and there's just these giant craters. At least that's one of the theories. Scientists say... Where is it? Where's the article? I don't have the clip that I need to say. But, oh, here it is. But exactly what is causing these enormous holes in the permafrost to appear and how suddenly they form is still largely a riddle. There are also unanswered questions about what they mean for the future of the Arctic, along with the people who live and work there. For many of those who study the Arctic, they are a disquieting sign that this cold, largely unpopulated landscape at the north of their planet is undergoing some radical change. So, that's very wild, I think. Oh, shucks, ducks. We're running out of time. I guess that's all we got today. Thank you for tuning in. I'm sorry that today was a little weird, but we'll just keep on rolling with it. Dubious Goals Committee's coming up, and my outro music should start playing any second now. Until then, just a heads up, German police have launched an investigation into the disappearance of a peculiar phallic-shaped sculpture from a mountainside in Bavaria. So, check out that big statue.
That our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.